Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that explores the stranger corners of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my good friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody how you're doing today?
Well, I am doing well, John. I'm just glad to be here with you. I love this place that you've chosen to record tonight. I love Dex's Diner. It's fantastic. Can you just can you tell me why you wanted to meet here, though? Because you just said you had something important you wanted to talk about.
Well, yes. It's this toxic dart that I'm going to shoot into your neck. I want to make sure that you're happy with the markings so that they don't give it away to the Jedi or their analysis droids.
So you're going to show it to me first? I gotta go, John. I gotta leave.
I like to taunt my prey. So, in case anybody can't guess, we are talking about something having to do with Attack of the Clones, the much maligned episode 2. In specific, we're going to be continuing our examination of the soundtracks, primarily through the lens not just of the films, but of how they were released in the mass market. And so, to start that journey, we're going to go back in time to 2002 when the Attack of the Clones soundtrack comes out. And Matt, I'm just going to go ahead and ask, when was the first time you heard the soundtrack or any piece of the soundtrack? Was it the movie or was it the release? And what was your first impression of the soundtrack?
Well, I am the guy who always gets the soundtrack if it's come out before the movie, especially if it's John Williams. And especially if it's mm-hmm. Star Wars. So I had, you know, the episode 1 soundtrack first. I had the episode 2 soundtrack first. I love listening to the music before the movie comes out, because to me, it helps me appreciate it more in the film, you know. Now, luckily, Lucas is the guy who loves to put music in his movie for the most part. And so he allows that to shine. But not every director is like that. So it could have a great soundtrack, but you might not feel like it was utilized as well as it could be. You know, most of the time, I think Lucas mm-hmm. does a fairly decent job of accentuating the soundtrack, you know, and making it important, because I think he understands mm-hmm. music to Star Wars is, as you know, I think Rebel Force Radio has a show and it's called The Oxygen of Star Wars. It's just that important, you know, music is.
Well, it is. I mean, Lucas himself has cited how he has constructed the films a lot like silent films. So all you would have would be the soundtrack, and then any dialogue that you would have would really be something out of the, you'd have the dialogue cards flash in the old silent right. era and stuff like that. So these, and the prequels, I think people can admit, episode 2 and 3, even more so than any of the other chapters, do exist in this strange abstract filmmaking place where dialogue really is not as important as the music. So the soundtrack of the film really is the score. And I remember the first time I heard any piece of the score was at Star Wars Celebration 2 in Indianapolis, one of the world's most poorly run conventions in history. And I remember the first time I heard the love theme was sitting in the main hall waiting, or actually, I think it was the second to main hall, whatever, and waiting for the presentation to begin. And the music started up, and one of the people I was there with said, "Oh, this is the love theme." And if anybody's watched Seinfeld, I was like that guy that would always have Elaine quiet down for that one Eagles song. And I shushed him. And I closed my eyes. I said, let me hear this. Let me hear this. And I actually closed my eyes and tried to tune into the piece of music. And the thing is, at that moment, and I think also when I saw the film, there's a very different character to this soundtrack than there was to The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Phantom Menace is more of a, it's more of an innocent and heroic and, you know, driving Star Wars score, whereas this I mean, it really speaks more to intrigue and darkness and mystery.
No, completely. I think this has a, I was thinking a noir melancholy feel to it, you know, that approach to Coruscant has that theme that's going to play out throughout Obi-Wan's mystery, and when you get into him visiting Kamino and the Kaminoans, and that theme really plays throughout. That's almost really, I mean, it's at the beginning of the film, but it also really becomes, I think, almost Obi-Wan's mystery theme. So that the movie starts out with this air of mystery. It's darker. Coruscant is, you know, layered in clouds. Everything is mysterious. And I think the music itself does a great job of portraying what we're seeing on screen visually, that everything is clouded. You know, nothing is as crisp and clean and clear as it was when we were in episode one, and the music had much more of a vibrancy to it. And, you know, even the villain music had this kind of beautiful choral nature to it. Here, it's darker and more sinister.
It's interesting that you assign it as an Obi-Wan sort of theme, that that mystery theme, if you will, that we're both getting at. But I always read it more as Count Dooku's theme, because the first time you hear it, bum, 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 that is when they start discussing Dooku, when Windu starts discussing, you know, starts saying, no, he couldn't possibly be involved in an assassination attempt. He used to be a Jedi. Come on. It's all good. It's all good. And I think it's interesting, though, because Obi-Wan and Dooku are very intertwined. So I could see it working for mm-hmm. either one of them, because their plot line really is running parallel to what's going on with Anakin.
Well, and there's now, that kind of, I don't want to sing it here on the show. People will really want to tune off. But that little theme that plays, especially when you get to Kamino, and it is there at the beginning as well as the one we were just talking about. So it all kind of mixes together. And again, I think it's just doing this really great job of saying that we're in really murky waters. You know, it's been 10 years since we saw these characters last, and the galaxy is slowly getting darker and a little bit more dangerous and not quite what we remember, you know, because we're about to start off this film too with an explosion of, you know, Padme's ship, and so and the death of another one of her bodyguards. So it's really, I think it's a well done beginning to the film musically to portray everything that I think Lucas and just the visual element are giving us.
For me, what's interesting about the soundtrack is that there is a definite waltz feel to both the exploration of the love theme and to Dooku's / Obi-Wan's theme, the mystery theme, if you will. And it's actually, and I find it interesting with, you know, if we're talking about pairing with visuals, in a sense, some of the color palette choices are evocative as well, but the music more so of Hitchcock's Vertigo, mm-hmm. Which I don't know. I've never read an interview where Williams says that was ever a specific call out. But to me, when I listen to the soundtrack, I can't help but hear Vertigo. And maybe that's because both movies are tied up with this idea of fated love, fateful love, if you will. And so, like, the love theme is this really big, sweeping Sound of Music-y sort of, you know, big piece of music. But then when it's explored in the smaller moments, it too has this darker feel to it. You have the one-on-one moments with Anakin and Padme, they very much contrast with, like, when she's running in the meadow and, you know, the hills are alive with the sound of Anakin faking his death to get the girl. You have that sort of big expansive use of the theme. But then when it's them one-on-one in the smaller moments, the love theme really does take this ominous tone to it. And I think that is really, more than any other emotional thread in Lucas's films, the music really gives the weight to what's actually going on between Anakin and Padme. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that this movie clearly has a 30s and 40s vibe to it. I'm thinking like the Maltese Falcon and those kind of films where we're using shadows, we're using lights, we're using soundtrack and all of these things to create a mood that feels very evocative of those type of mystery films, but also in the same sense that that sweeping love theme brings in that idea of like this Camelot type feel, you know, like where everything's kind of a whirlwind and it's bigger than life. And so is this romance in the sense that it is clearly a Lancelot and, you know, Guinevere type of thing. So it brings together all of those films and all of those feelings. And I think that the music in the film does a great job of playing that. Now, what we get in the soundtrack is very different because it's very truncated. It's 13 tracks. And sadly, I think it's one of the laziest soundtrack additions to Star Wars that they've ever given us, because as we know from just watching the film, there's so much more music that's going on here that just isn't given to us.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that, because there's sort of a very interesting thought that I have regarding that. But the first thing I really want to get to, though, is while we're sitting here talking about the themes, is that I think that more so than in any of the previous Star Wars films, in the themes on this soundtrack, there's a different feel with each planet that you go to, right? There's a different air. Tatooine has a very different sound signature to it than Coruscant does. Coruscant sees the first use of electric guitar, I believe, in a Star Wars soundtrack.
It does, with that chase scene with Zam, yeah.
Yeah. And it feels very out of place, which is sort of like why I'm doubling back to it, is like, in terms of those choices, does the Coruscant music, the Zam chase music, take you out of the soundtrack at all? Because I know that the first time I listened to it, like, I had a jarring reaction where I was like, oh, this doesn't sound like Star Wars.
I think the first time that I heard it, that I felt like that. As I've come to watch the film more and more, I think it actually kind of fits with that electric boogaloo-looking nightlife that's going on, you know, with all the flashing Vegas-type lights that we get, and especially Lower Coruscant. And as that chase goes on, we're getting down to the dregs of Coruscantian society, you know? So it's like that discordant nature of what's above and below on Coruscant starts to come into play. And I think that's where that guitar comes from. Does that make sense?
That's very interesting, because I think you're right. There is a progression to the music even when you get down into the lower parts of the chase, there's like a jungle rhythm introduced to it. Like jungle drums. And so you're absolutely right. There's three different tonal qualities to that music as you go lower and lower down. Wow, I hadn't consciously thought of that till you said it. That's great, man. Nice pull.
Wow, always the tone of surprise.
Yeah, well, what can I say?
But hey, man, you know, just because you're Mr. Tough Mudder, okay? I don't need your judgment.
Oh, hush. Okay, so here's the thing, though, because you know what? Now it's planted in my brain because you brought it up about the soundtrack release. Okay. Phantom Menace had a single disc release as well, and had that very frustrating sort of like mishmash of themes put together for a couple of tracks where you could never quite recreate the soundtrack. Like, you would sit there, you're like, oh, this is the part is this where droids are? And this, though, like, I know why I call out Attack of the Clones in specific for its shortcomings as a soundtrack release. What is it with you? I mean, you mentioned the 13 tracks. What is it that's most frustrating about this release for you, though? Because going all the way back to Return of the Jedi soundtrack back in 1983, they shortchanged that one, too.
Yeah.
So what is it you think that makes this one really pop as the example of a dissatisfying soundtrack release?
I think because there's just so many places where I don't feel the storyline. Like, there's so many gaps in the storyline, you know, the small moments, you know, all of the music that happens on Kamino, a lot of it's missing, you know, and there's that wonderful ominous undertones playing that's there, especially as Obi-Wan is meeting the Prime Minister for the first time and that kind of stuff. That stuff's just really missing. The entire Jango fight sequence, I don't think, is quite on the soundtrack. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. Conveyor belts. I mean, the full range of what happens in the arena. I mean, it's just there's so much that's gone. Especially when you watch the movie and then you get to the soundtrack, the movie feels so small. But this movie is so big with all the stuff that's going on.
Now, see, you know, it's really interesting because the Target release, I think, yeah, it was the Target release had the music from the conveyor belt sequence, but I know that wasn't on every single release, so it was yet the first in a long line of those multi-release that garbage. I hate when they do different version at this store and at that store. It's like, you know what? Come on, man. That's
hey,
just,
you can get the new Taylor Swift like album, but if you get it at Target, you get three extra songs, and you're like, I just want to buy it on iTunes. Okay, make it easy,
right? Or if you buy The Force Awakens at Target, you get a behind the scenes blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
exactly.
I hate that stuff. But for me, I think the reason that the soundtrack is given such short shrift in terms of the release is there is so much music spotting that happens in the battle sequence on Geonosis. Like the first time I watched the movie, the score was actually frustrating to me. Because when it got to the battle sequence, I had, in the interim between episode one and episode two, and I'll make this story very brief, I had a friend, Joey, who said that the episode one soundtrack didn't sound like it belonged with Star Wars. I, of course, insisted it did. So I put together a compilation CD where I took the episode one soundtrack and I stitched it together so that all of the themes worked in, and I, you know, did juxtaposition and counters with, you know, the previous three soundtracks. And then we get to Attack of the Clones, and I hear, you know, the released music and everything, and I'm like, okay, well, I can tell that this is missing stuff. When you get to the Geonosis battle, there is so much spotting of little snippets of episode one stuff. It honestly took me out of the movie the first time I watched it, because I had done all of this sort of music editing with the episode one soundtrack, and I could tell what pieces they had taken and slapped back together. And it used to drive me nuts. I guess I've just settled down about it, and it sounds fine to me now. But the first time I watched it, like it drove me to distraction.
I wonder if that's especially that sequence, you know, because so much of the CGI, the finishing touches on it aren't quite ready, and so to have Williams trying to get stuff ready for that, maybe there was something to that because there's just not a lot for him to go off of on the scene because so much of it is being cobbled together from different sources, live action, CGI, everything else, and they're putting it all together. I have a feeling that in the Yoda scene are the ones that are taking them the most time to put together in the computer. We just don't have the processing power at that point.
But the thing is, I refuse to give the dodge.
I'm not saying it's a good excuse. No.
Because they had the animatics. And Williams is good enough that if you basically show him an animated movie, he'll be like, oh, yeah, I get what's going on here. And he could have at least given you a couple of transitional cues, because spotting happens in the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack. And it happens in the Return of the Jedi soundtrack, all over the place, like including, you know, probably the most beloved music from Return of the Jedi is when Vader's stalking Luke and he makes Luke flip out, never, and he fights him. The buildup music to that is subbed in for what Williams recorded for Luke encountering Jabba. So like the music spotting, I don't have a problem with that. I just wish it was music that was spotted from within the same film, if that makes sense. But since they didn't have other battle music to draw from, it feels like they just went back and they were just like, you know what? We'll just fill it in. And for me, that actually feels like Lucas's instincts working against him, where he's saying, well, we have this library of music and we can just sort of put it together, when he knows full well Williams is going to give him something better to work with if he just gives him a little hook to hold on to.
That's something, though, that I like about the scene, you know, when Obi-Wan is watching the clones get on the ship for the first time, They're at Kamino, and they're, you know, getting their helmets and all that stuff, and the build up to it being the Trade Federation theme that we knew, and the link between that and this, and the mechanicization of humanity to be just another war machine, I thought was really, really interesting and great, because they hold off on the Empire theme till the very end of the movie, where all the clones are finally getting on all these ships and the Clone Wars have started, and we realize this is the beginning of the Empire. It's not when Padme will say later on in episode 3. It's here. Like, it's way before you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but my counterpoint to that is going to be that, at least in the scene that you're referencing, I don't have a problem with that either, because it's a fully realized expression of the theme with a natural transitional resolution to the next scene, whereas the stuff that's occurring in the battle is literally them taking 10 seconds here, snip, 10 seconds there, snip. And if you know the flow of the episode 1 soundtrack well enough, which I did by that point because of what I had done, like, which I'm not saying to elevate me. I'm just saying, like, I happened to have been, you know, like, mixing with that stuff. That's what drove me to distraction, was I was like, oh, that's 10 seconds from this track, and that's 20 seconds from this track. And that's like, and it just felt like such a, it felt like a cheat to me. I would have preferred them to actually have no music during that sequence, because it would have felt even more jarring as to how off-putting this war is, because, you know, like, it doesn't belong. Like, this war shouldn't be happening. Everybody's saying that we shouldn't be going to war. And so if you take away Williams's music and just let the explosions be the soundtrack, you have a situation where it's even more jarring and more, and pops more realistically. But I mean, you know, if wishes were fishes, we'd all cast nets. So I'm not going to beat up on it too much, because I've come to peace with it and I can live with it now.
What did you think about the expression for Yoda in the film? You know, where he's training the younglings and giving us kind of a new look at that character, mm-hmm. especially in a way that we had never seen Yoda, but we'd always heard about Yoda.
Well, I mean, the music fit. It felt very, if it were possible, it felt, I lack the word for it, but it felt like a gentler use of the theme. It felt like a, Williams is very good at using music to express that very sort of hard to describe emotion, but it felt very much like, almost like a lullaby expression of the theme for Yoda's theme. So that was, you know, I think that's good. And I think you're right. It does speak to, you know, where the character is, you know, there. But I mean, speaking of Yoda again, that's with the soundtrack release, one of my favorite musical moments in the movie. I don't know if they'd even bother really putting this on. Well, I guess they would, because there is a buildup when he's doing the sort of demonstration of powers with Dooku, and he goes, you know, Count Dooku, and you hear this strum that's like the old gunfighter just walked in, you know, and you're like, oh, I know what that sound means. What is it about the soundtrack, though, for you that does work? What are the highlights of it? What are the best parts, whether it's the release or in the film?
I'd say for me, the things that I really enjoy when I'm listening to the soundtrack, I really like the chase through Coruscant now, because I can picture it in my head. The music has a wonderful, like, sense of zaniness to it that you don't get in a lot of mm-hmm. Star Wars music. It reminds me of Williams' work that he did for Harry Potter in the third film with the kind of like psychedelic jazz that he did with the night bus scene. This kind of has that same kind of intense feel to it, but with a darker undertone and not quite as much fun, but more like we're chasing after somebody to get information. You know, it just, I ended up liking it. I like the way that, like we talked about, the music changes as they kind of descend lower and lower into Coruscant. And something that's really not on the soundtrack release that I really enjoy from the film is I like the small scene And just the whimsical music with Dex in the diner. I like that.
Oh, I was gonna cite that too.
Yeah. So it's just one of those moments where you're outside of the grandness of all that's happening, and it's just this very simple scene between two friends, and I think it actually works out pretty beautifully. And it's really short. I mean, but it's just a fun. It's one of the few places I feel like Williams got to have like fun. I think the Yoda scene where he got mm-hmm. to do some whimsy was where he got to have fun, and the rest of this movie is very like it's melodramatic, you know, and so is the music.
Yeah. I like those choices. I mean, I think that like you have to take the love theme and sort of elevate it and move it off to the side because it's like it's in its own category, you know, like it's the basic structure of a whole motif through the soundtrack. So accepting that, the music when Anakin finds his mother and that discussion mm-hmm. with her, yeah. Not to, you know, I've always promised that I'll be open and honest with our audience, Matt. So I will say that it reminds me of a very emotional time in my own life. And I can't listen to that piece of music mm-hmm. without getting yeah. a little choked up. Like I will actually be listening to it like when I'm at work, you know, working on the computer, and the cue will come up and I'll actually get a little choked up and I'm like, it's a fast forward. But for me, like the single best moment on the entire thing is truncated on the released soundtrack from the film version, and it drives me nuts. And that is when Dooku escapes Geonosis
and
arrives at Coruscant. That's truncated on the soundtrack, and it drives me insane because it's so awesome. And I can still remember sitting in the theater with my two cousins watching it and seeing that shot of Dooku's solar sailor going into Coruscant and hearing that music cue and my breath literally being taken away because I was like, this is amazing. Like, it just completely pulled me in, and the way it builds. And then, you know, begun the Clone War has, and then it goes into the Imperial March. And then, you know, the big sweeping love theme and like this feeling of, you know, okay, here's the setup and we're about to go into the final stretch. It goes into the one part of the released soundtrack that I think is actually superior to the film's version of the score. And that's the end credits. Because the end credits resolve differently on the released soundtrack than they do in the film. And I like the way it ends on the soundtrack. And the first time I saw the film, I was disappointed because it doesn't end the same way. And so I actually prefer the soundtrack's treatment of the music during the end credits than the way it's done in the film.
I also really like the music that we get on Geonosis, where Obi-Wan is sneaking around and there's that and I just love the way that Williams is using the orchestra to create these kind of tonal sounds and these ticks and everything, and it kind of gives you the heebie-jeebies, you know, like that, because it's a place infested by bugs basically, and it makes you feel like it musically. And so I just love that Williams almost is showing off his ability to tonally give you what you're seeing visually, you know. He mm-hmm. really is so good at that.
Yeah, the Star Wars films are nowhere near as successful without his scores, period, and end of sentence. I've never seen a composer, possibly with the exception of Hans Zimmer working with Christopher Nolan. And there you go. There's my obligatory Christopher Nolan love for the week for everybody.
wow, you got more Chris Nolan love in than I have with Obi-Wan this week. What is going on?
I know the world is topsy-turvy. Perhaps we need to send you off and investigate what's going on. I don't know. Those Jedi droids can't figure it out.
They probably can't. But, they're only looking at symbols, you know.
Right. It's these markings on the side. Yeah. But, you know, it's really fun. I really enjoy the series with us, revisiting the soundtracks. Any parting thoughts?
Well, I'd say the parting thought is, and we're probably going to reiterate this with episode 3, but this soundtrack needs a complete recordings release, you know, because this and episode 3 really need that so that we have at least all 6 original films before we get to the sequel trilogy to have a full soundtrack release. And I think Star Wars deserves it. You know, John Williams' music has gotten it before. Obviously, with episode 1, with episode 4, 5, and 6, they have that as well. I think of the Superman release they did. So all of that stuff is so important. And, you know, these two films are important to the saga and shouldn't be forgotten.
Absolutely agree. And you know what else shouldn't be forgotten before we go here is that if anybody is interested in trying Loot Crate, which is a service where you can go ahead and get all sorts of exclusive collectibles from t-shirts to trinkets to what have you. You can actually get a discounted membership through listening to the Nerd Party by going to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, and you can go ahead and get a discount on your new subscription. And it's a really great service. We encourage you to check it out. And while they're checking that out, Matt, where can they find you online?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. They can also find me on the Trek FM network doing a few shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. I'm also doing Literary Treks with Dan Gunther and Bruce Gibson. We're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also get a chance to interview the authors. And then I also do The 602 Club, which is our general geek show. We talk about something fun and new each week in geekdom, one of our favorite fandoms. And so come on over and join us. I don't think you'll be sorry. Now, John, before we get out of here, where can everybody find you?
Well, Matt, you can find me on just about any social network at Kessel Junkie, but especially Twitter. That's where I like harassing you a lot of the time.
You do, yeah.
And I do very much. And I'm also on the Trek FM network on a podcast called Stage 9, where we examine the non-Trek work of Star Trek creatives. And I co-host a show called Words with Nerds with my pal Craig that we explore a lot of the, you know, the sillier versions of things that are out there and sequels that maybe never have been made but should be. And of course, they can find both of us on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. That's the official show account. And they can send an email to us at an@thenerdparty.com.
And then, of course, you can find the show on Facebook with the rest of The Nerd Party at facebook.com/thenerdparty. Now, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.